Welcome to With People, For People. I'm Andreas Schmitz.
And I'm Shazeb Akhtar. We talk about human-centric leadership at home, at work, in sports and society.
We're family people, senior leaders and professional basketball players. Well, at least at heart.
Join us on our learning journey with people, for people. Hi, Andreas. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. For the audience, we just decided to have the session in English once again, as we were approached by a couple of people asking us several times, are you doing this in English? And we said, yes, sometimes. And we reviewed our episodes. And yeah, there are some, but not many. So this time, we'd like to give you the opportunity to listen in us speaking English and being smart. Anyway, Shazeb, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I think that you thought of recording in English again because of that lady that we met last week or the week before that on the event where we went together, a Future of Leadership Salon. There was this lady, I actually can't recall her name, but she asked us about the podcast being recorded in English. And we unfortunately had to say that most of the episodes we record are in German.
Yeah, there was the Swedish colleague who was running the university, right?
This
new kind of university. I also don't have the name present right now, unfortunately. But if you listen in, we could remember. And that was one of the reasons why we are switching now.
Yes, we are.
So you were mentioning that event. So let's maybe start the episode, which has actually a different core, but we wanted to also review and also reflect on this event we had our speeches and our workshops on. And that was quite an interesting event, wasn't it?
I really liked it. And I have to say that I was expecting it to be professional and nice and interesting, but it exceeded my expectations. And I'll tell you why. I liked its size. If I remember correctly, there were 80 people. I also feel they were quite handpicked. And what I really liked about this event is that it had a lot of diversity. I think that was by design, because if you know Eve, and for many of our regular listeners, they probably remember Eve's name by listening to one of our episodes where we invited her. Eve is someone who is a very open-minded world person. And she invited people from all ways of life, from different industries, different ages, and all kinds of different profiles. And I really enjoyed that. What about you?
Yeah, Eve Simon, she's, I think, present in the US and in Germany, living there, and tries to bridge also a little bit there from a cultural perspective. And yeah, she has energy without end, right? Limitless. I think she was even sick when she was on stage there, but well, even her being sick was more energy than most people being healthy. A little bit like Michael Jordan, I guess, still playing better basketball with the flu than others without. But I enjoyed it. And yeah, the mix was one, the atmosphere, it was not too strict, right? There was, of course, where there was an agenda and people had the topics, but it felt all natural, right? And that was something I enjoyed. And also our workshop, which was a little bit improvised. Of course, we had a plan, but we switched around a little bit. And also our facilitating colleagues were running with us, right? And they weren't upset because we changed on short notice some of the procedures we were doing there. So it felt all good. We had good discussions there. We also had some epiphanies, I guess, with us and with our guests.
I know which one you're going to mention, the one where people were supposed to come up with something great about future AI scenarios, and they were dragged down to the worst scenarios. But, you know, there's one thing I have to debrief with you before you pick up that point again. I really got reassured again on how to prepare things, because if you think about a continuum where you can either prepare nothing for a presentation or for a keynote or for a group discussion, or you could prepare everything where you basically have a script, I think either of those extremes are not good. So what we ended up doing, if you obviously you remember that when we had our keynote, you and I, we prepared, let's say some bullet points, and we went through them maybe 2-3 times, and we had some time in the car where we discussed different examples. And I think we brought it in the car, from my perspective, from 50 to maybe 85%. And the rest, I think the missing 15% were probably improvised. I really enjoyed that. And the second thing I realized again in the group work that we had afterwards, we had the same thing. We had it prepared somewhat. We had a structure, but the rest of it was improvised. And I really felt this was ideal. And so once again, in my mid-40s, I'm realizing if you overdo it, it's going to be equally bad as if you don't prepare it at all.
Mid-40s, not quite, right? They still have a year to go.
44. But, yeah. 44.
Yeah, I'm much younger, so I can say that. No, exactly. We were preparing in the car. I had to prepare a little bit before, and then we were going 240 kilometers an hour on the Autobahn, partly, while going through. No, honestly, that was good. It was a good drive, actually was a good trip. We could talk a little bit for a couple of hours, and yeah, besides the preparation for the speeches and workshops, I enjoyed that as well.
I think you're referring to my very loud car with a loud exhaust. But in my ears, that's music, my friend.
Well, yeah, for me, somewhat too. But you know, I'm driving electric cars for some time now, and that's they're just fast and not loud anymore. So that's the difference. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no worries. Besides the car, I enjoyed the time anyway.
You know what? I realized one more thing, and then I think we should move to our topic for today. Which is, I was telling Mubina that, I mean, we're not just podcast partners, right? We're friends. And I really enjoyed also just the quiet time sitting there. If you don't have the pressure that you have to say something or you have to do something or you have to ask something, that's quite liberating. And I think this is quite nice. Sometimes you enjoy being quiet with someone. So that was also enjoyable.
Now it becomes a little bit romantic because that's what I said on the video when on my wedding day when I was interviewed there. What I like about Marijke, we can also sit together and be quiet.
I don't want to be a competition to Marijke because she
picked you up.
exactly. All right, so let's move to the topic. So you made a proposal.
Have you read the feedback we got from Eve? I mean, that was that's a little bit self marketing right now, but I have to. Read that out to you. It's just to the audience. So maybe because there's lots of posts on the event, let's put that together here.
Man, I have to tell you something before you read it. I have to tell you something. I know it's positive feedback because I saw it somewhat through the side of my eye. I try to block out great feedback because I think that it can make you a little bit lazy. But nevertheless, let's read it out here.
Read it out, and we say to tell the audience, if you find it and if you like it, great. If you say, well, that's just too much, that's just over the top, tell us as well.
Come on, read your favorite sentence. I'm okay with it. Read it.
Just use the favorite sentence. So blah, 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 blah. And then witness the exceptional acceleration of death and connection is impactful magic. Thank you both for unleashing the force. And that was written on May the 4th. Be with you, right? That you may know that. But anyway, so Eve, thank you for that feedback and happy to join you next time if we invite it again, either as guests or speakers, doesn't really matter. I think that was a great event, great movement, and we're happy to contribute. But now let's move to our real topic here.
Totally, totally. Looking forward, so you wrote something to me which was immediately interesting. So you started by proposing that we talk about the concept of first team. So you can maybe explain what you mean by it. And maybe you can also answer the question, what's the difference between the first team and your starting five?
Okay. I start with the first question and then maybe I don't remember the second one. So maybe how I came to that is, as you know, I'm also doing some consulting work right now besides running my own company. And one of the concepts I see a lot of times being missed is the one of the first team. That's something which has, to me, a big impact on how leadership teams work together. I also have a story of what was a reaction of my team once, so the direct reports I led, when I told them about the first team, but I'll tell that a little bit later. Some of the former colleagues will remember that occasion. But the first team, what is it? So usually you have, as a manager, you have a team of people that report to you, right? You have either a team lead or you have a department or you have an organization, doesn't really matter, but you have people reporting to you. And what typically happens is, as a first-line manager, you kind of bond with the team, ideally, right? You have hired some of them, you've promoted some of them, you go to team events with your direct reports, and usually what happens is, you defend them as well, which is also sometimes a job of a manager, right? To see that the team is being protected to some extent. But that has a downside. And the downside is, well, you sometimes put your direct reports and your organization you lead first, meaning before the interests of the organization as a whole. And that's why the first team, who's really the first team? It should ideally be your peers, right? It should be your peer managers and your manager. That should be your first team, ideally, so that it's not about only your team. Of course, you're still defending them or working with them. The defending might be the wrong word, but it is about working for the whole instead of just for one team, assuring that, well, the resources are distributed correctly, that you help out each other, that you hold each other accountable. And we once talked about the five dysfunctions or functions of a team. That only works if the first team are people on the same level, on the peers of managers in this case, being it direct managers or leaders on a more senior level. That plays a critical role, and we can go into that a little bit later. But what did you connect with that?
I got it. I think you meant something else than what I thought you meant. So just to clarify in my own words, so by leadership team, you mean the team that are basically you and your peers that manage the whole organization, that are reporting into the same person that you're reporting into. So basically, your neighboring organizations that are usually sometimes perceived as your competition, but you're proposing that this is the true leadership team, because if you work together, you will reach something greater, not just for the company, but also effectively for your own team. What I understood was something else, and maybe we can also touch on that, because I also found this interesting. So what I meant by leadership team, or understood by leadership team, is my immediate first line team that is reporting into me. But having said that, in my case, I usually have on my leadership team also people from the organization that are more junior. So I've made it my habit that I pull up people from the organization that have a much younger age, or maybe much less responsibility per se, or that are closer to some specific role like product owner or scrum master or a developer or someone who's working closely with a customer in our leadership team. So we have no ivory tower effect. So we're always connected somehow to the business. But I think I would obviously start with your proposal that we talk about you as a leader and your peers, that this should be the understanding of a leadership team and not you in your silo.
Yeah. However, that brings us to the critical point, right? What about you as a manager of those managers, of the leader of the leaders, right? Because technically, you're not part of that first team, because by definition, you're part of your own peer organizations and you have a manager again, right? That is the critical point. You want your direct reports, leaders in this case, to work together as one team. And that is expected of yourself, unless you're the CEO, that's expected of you as well. And that's exactly the story I once had when I was bringing this concept to, there was at Roche, when a couple of months that I had taken over the leadership for the HR department in Germany. And I had put my team in place that I knew this was the team I wanted to work with and I had full trust in. And I told them, this team needs to be the first team, and told them the definition. And then I think it was Paul again. It's usually Paul, the bigger man who some of you know as well here. Sorry, Paul, for picking on you. And he said, Andreas, that by definition means you're not part of this team as a first team. I said, yeah, you're right. I'm part of Kristen's team. And then people were looking at me, what do you mean you're not part of this team? You're telling us we should be the first team and you're not part of it? And it ended up in a quite an emotional discussion. And I first thought it was funny, but no, that wasn't funny anymore. People were really questioning that because of a concept. We felt like a close team in there, and I was part of it. Of course I am, but it brought me into some situation where it was, what is it? Actually, should I have said, no, you are, I put you over the team of my peers, of my leader, or not? It's actually, and at the end, it was not about who do you like more, right? It's not about I trust you more, I like you more. It's about who do you relate to that you're not working in your bubble. It is about doing the best for the company. And I think that's the message of the first team, making sure that you're not overprotecting your own, whatever own is, organization and team, but making sure it's for the benefit of the whole.
Isn't that but not just a question of perspective? Because if your boss is looking at his immediate direct reports and you're part of it, I'm part of it, and he's asking us to work together and he's trying to bring the trust into this leadership team, then this is exactly what is happening, right? I mean, this is something that I always do. So when I take over an organization, my number one priority is that I get to know the people who are directly reporting into me, and then making sure that I make myself obsolete as quickly as possible by making these people extremely effective working with each other and pulling basically the same rope. And I think if you have a manager on top who understood that, how critical that is to make yourself unnecessary, this is a really great goal to have, I feel.
And you know, that's something I can admit I somewhat missed in my last position, right? Where I put too much emphasis on the leadership team, because I had the feeling that is the biggest lever And I had the feeling that I need to help that team more than it maybe was even my role, and put more time into that than with my own team, meaning the HR team in this case. At the end, it turned out, well, I missed some pieces. I missed some bits and pieces, how much the support I needed, what are the real strengths and some of the weaknesses, what is the team interaction. Of course, I got it, but on a too superficial level, that at the end I was clear that, well, I should have invested more to what you say. First, make sure that everything runs smoothly in front of your own door, and then you can look at the larger picture, right? Even though you feel, well, that this might not be the biggest lever for the organization, well, at the end it is, because you have a better position to work from. You can spend more time. You can say you have your mindset in a more clear way to the overall picture if you know that everything is running well in your own house.
You know, I think there is a logic to it which is not wrong. So I think there should be a sequence. So if you step into a new role, let's assume you're taking over an organization. And from my perspective, from my experience, I would always propose to first look at your own team, your own silo, so to say, that you're responsible and accountable for. People who are reporting into you as a position, as a role, and people who rely on you, who look at you. I think you have the first responsibility for them in an immediate factor. Because you have to look at the operational immediate organization, if it's running smoothly, if things are working. And I think once that is settled, the operational work, the day-to-day work, then you can focus on the more strategic things. So the long-term things or midterm things, where you obviously also have to do some stakeholder management and look at your own peers and understand their goals and what they're struggling with, how you can help them. Of course, it's not black or white. It's not like you're dealing with your own people for a few months and you're going into submarine mode. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying that you're focusing more on getting hold of your own topics, your own team, your own people, because otherwise you run into the risk of them feeling neglected, because they have an ownership for you as their manager. That's what I feel.
Yeah, to some extent, I agree. However, and that might be a difference of what kind of role you have. And I certainly feel, as an head of people and culture or HR, it's not only your team that has immediate expectations. It is the whole organization who want to have an immediate impact on whatever, a better work atmosphere, benefits, working from home or vacation, whatever that might be, right? That everybody has something else. That's a difficult piece. Everybody has something else on their mind. If you have a works council, they have waited for you maybe even for a couple of months. Same as your team, by the way. They are expecting something to happen. If you're a public figure almost in that organization. But I still would say you're right. Make sure that your own organization gets the attention to have them run as smoothly as possible if they don't do that already. And make sure you understand it, because it will be the bigger lever in the long run anyway, right? If your organization is not running well, you won't get anywhere.
No, I totally agree. I mean, in the case of HR, or maybe something like a COO role, where you have responsibility for the whole company, I think it makes a lot of sense to have a close connection to basically everyone, because you have a cross-functional responsibility. And I think in this case, it makes a lot of sense to have connection immediately from the beginning with almost everyone. So you can also reflect back with your fresh mind what other people are thinking of your organization and what they're maybe expecting of it. And I think specifically talking about HR, one of the things I always find interesting and fascinating is, and I think I've mentioned it before, when you think about the role of an HR business partner, there is such an emphasis on being a partner, on being on eye level, on being strategic and being sitting with a seat at the table. But in reality, that's not the case. In many companies, HRBPs are literally treated as commodity or as people who do operational work that you want to get done. And I think for things like that, where you want to make a statement as a new leader, that from you there is to be expected more, and you expect that you're treated on eye level strategically as well, it's extremely important to make that statement and to be visible immediately.
Brings me a little bit to what you said before, right? You said you have, when you put together your leadership team, you bring in other people, right? And for some it's natural, but for others it is new bringing in an HR person to their leadership team. And what I usually say is, well, first of all, it's not a given. And second, even if you have the seat at the table, that doesn't mean anything before you have no impact at the table, right? You have to make sure that you understand what's going on. And that is true for all of the functions. If you say you invite other people from other organizations, maybe more junior people, I still expect them to look at the bigger picture, right? To have a say, to open their mouth and give feedback. Of course, you have to encourage them more, or you might call them later on because they might not have the self-assurance yet to speak when they're invited for the first time. But hey, at the end, you need those voices, right? You need those voices to be heard, and you need people who speak up and who understand where it's going. And that's true for HR, for finance, for every function, I guess. Also for the diversity people you bring in. In this case, when you said the seniority plays a role, here again, you sit there and you listen. That's good. That's their learning. But ideally, you or the rest of the group gets something out because you speak up.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I propose we bring another turn to the conversation. So we started talking about the idea of not just seeing your own organization that is HR-wise or org chart-wise in your responsibility where people report into you, but you realize that your main leadership team is you and your peers. So people who are along with you reporting to the same person, and you have to make sure that you focus on these people so that you can work together and you can work on a common goal and be on one team and not create silos. So that's a really nice thought. And I think this is something that we should definitely promote and provoke to do 100%. And if you agree, I would now like to also emphasize on this other idea of leadership team within the boundaries of your organization, where typically people would bring in those people into the leadership team that are reporting directly into you or that have certain teams that are within your responsibility, or people with a certain seniority, or sometimes even people with a certain gender. And I think a leadership team should have different perspectives. And this is what I was suggesting before, that when I took over my previous leadership team, I remember I took it over from my predecessor. So I was put into the success factor system and I just saw who was going to report into me. And I realized immediately that, well, there are three guys, they have a comparable age, and they're all leaders of teams themselves. And I realized, wow, this is for me a very stereotypical and one-sided way of leading a topic or a team or an organization. And I felt like I would like to have a more diverse set of people, and not for the sake of diversity, honestly. It was not about, oh, we need a woman or something like that. For me, it was like, I actually would appreciate different perspectives. So someone who is maybe a little bit more bold or a little bit more fresh or maybe a little bit more careless, because that person has nothing to lose or has less to lose, or someone who is, I don't know, humorous maybe, who doesn't take things too seriously, if you know what I mean. And, you know, I proposed to get someone into the team who is a young female colleague. And let me tell you, honestly, one of the guys from the leadership team was like, okay, her? And I was like, yeah. And now, a couple of months later, he approached me and he said, hey, man, this made a lot of sense. It's really cool she's here because she's fresh and she's cool and she's a woman, and also men are different when they're with women. And I was like, okay, well, this is not something that applies to me, but if it applies to you, that's great. So you think on a different track when she's around, and that's wonderful. So that's basically to get out of a bias. So you remember that one episode we had on biases, right? When you are surrounded by people that just think like you. I think this is a wonderful tool to not run into the risk of having confirmation bias or groupthink in your leadership team.
Yeah, agree. And I think it's not even a contrast to what we were discussing before. I think it plays into the same thing that you're looking beyond your horizon, beyond your boundaries of just an org chart you see. And one thing that you said, I think it's important to highlight, is that it's not enough just to invite somebody, right? It is, you need to make sure that this is also resonating, that it's being used, right? That you're listening to those voices and feedback. Because I also have seen it that people got the hint to also invite, in this case, younger talents, and they were invited to a relatively senior leadership team or group of leaders, and it was not moderated in a way that they made use, or we made use of those younger talents. And they were sitting there, and of course, they when we went around, they were sometimes asked, but it wasn't really like, huh, let's use it actively. Let's see what the generation Y, Z, Alpha thinks about this and how this could resonate or not. I know you, you're pulling those people in and you're having and facilitating a conversation, but not everybody is doing that automatically. So no, don't just invite somebody for being there. Make sure they are included really in the discussion points.
Yeah, I fully agree. So let me ask you back. So when you think of including people who are untypical into your leadership team now going forward, who would you think of and what kind of scenario would you have in mind to pull that person in? And in which case would you expect an input that is really helpful and interesting?
So maybe I've done that in the past in a way that we had it open enrollment, right? That we said for 1 month, so for two meetings, somebody can enroll and be there. And so two people could there be there from the organization, regardless of who it is, right? First come, first serve. That was fine. That created a transparency because people were asking anyway, what are these people doing all day long, because they're not doing any work, so any real work, they're just talking, exaggerating a little bit, but it wasn't really transparent, and that created transparency. We sent out the notes, we gave a little video message after the call, and we said, hey, here was Max and Petra and whoever, they joined us as well, they can tell you a little bit of what we discussed in more depth. Of course, some points, as you always know, are somewhat confidential, and that we're not talking about their colleagues or their bosses in front of them, that of course didn't happen. But that was one occasion. I think going forward, the lesson I learned is some people gave a really interesting feedback because it was different than we thought. And I have somebody in mind who has a really analytical, and because he was the people analytics guy, and his feedback was somewhat different as for the rest of the group. That's what I would look at. I'm not even sure I can tell you right now because it depends on who is on your leadership team, same as you, right? If you have a certain group of people, you may want to look for something you're missing. But you also have to make sure, I think, that they kind of connect to some extent. So you have to find this middle ground, at least for the beginning, somebody connects and who has a different perspective at the beginning.
Do you like this episode? Then subscribe to our podcast. I would like to add my perspective. So I think that the element of surprise is underrated. It's highly underrated. I expect someone to just be different, no matter how different, but basically to, in a friendly way, keep everyone on their toes, to keep everyone active. You know, I mean, the outcome could be the same, but it's just, if that person is on the team as well, I believe many people would cross their ideas through another gate or filter before they would share their thoughts.
Would you consider taking somebody not in your organizational line from an org chart perspective? So let's take the, not necessarily your direct peer, but somebody out of their organization, right? So to have that different flavor in there as well, somebody who maybe has this challenging view.
I think so, totally. You know, and it's funny, sometimes you have to have people on your leadership team because those people, they lead teams themselves, so you can't leave them out. But you will be surprised how much I actually go with my gut of people. So when I have, as in the example I just shared before, we had those three guys that had a similar age. Let's say the age group was in the width of 10 years between each other, right? And I was like, no, man, this is just too homogenic. The likelihood that we will miss something is 100%. We need to find someone who is younger, who is closer to the customer, who is closer to the ground. And we need that person to come in. I think it was you who told me this junior first principle. I like that. So you have someone who's junior and you ask that person to speak up his or her thought at first. And I think everyone wins because no one would take the statement of that person too seriously and making that person feel ridiculous because everyone knows that person is junior, so you can't punish that person for a statement. And the junior person who's allowed to speak has the benefit that it can basically, like in a laboratory, try out their thoughts and understand how are people reacting. And I think everyone else who is more experienced and who has more seasons lived can then basically add to that point. And so everyone learns. I think this is such a great idea.
Yeah, and it brings me back to the first team concept of trust as well as a basis. You need to give everybody the trust. They can speak up, they can screw up, and we have your back at the end, right? We challenge each other. We make sure that you deliver, but we also say, well, if something goes wrong or if you say something stupid, well, it doesn't matter, right? We all say something stupid at times. So rather say something that is stupid if it comes out of your mind authentically than trying to find smart words that maybe nobody understands at the end or doesn't bring any value. Even if it's hurting somebody, well, then you clean it up, right? You bring it in order again afterwards. But let's be honest and straight out. And I think that is the leader's job. How do you create that atmosphere or that trust level that people feel that it is okay to speak your mind right now, even though you might have 10 different voices in the room that disagree and you still drink a glass of water later on.
Yeah, I think this is a nice ending to this topic. If you would agree, then I would leave it to this. Or I actually do have a final question to you. What is the analogy to the starting five then? So for those listeners who don't know the starting five phenomenon. So starting five, obviously in basketball, you're allowed to, at least in Germany, you're allowed to bring 10 people to a game. And of those 10 people, you have five that are starting the game. And the starting five is something like a quality sign. So if you're on the starting five, it means you belong to the best players on the team. Is that something that you would compare with a leadership team?
Partly not, because what I always found interesting is that the starting five is a constant for too many games. And that you say this is always the group that plays and starts independent of the opponent you play to. I disagree with those philosophies that it's only that static five people, because it might depend on the opponent, on the game you play, you want to play, you bring in different people. If the defensive setup of the opponent is with only high and tall players, you might want to bring in small ones, quick ones, fast ones, shooters, who outplay and outrun them, right? And that's something where I say, same as for maybe leadership team, you bring in different people to bring in a different perspective in the basketball terminology, you bring in a different person to disrupt your routine and also disrupt the opponent's view of your team. So that's how I would see it a little bit different than most teams actually play it. At least in Germany, you end up with a static five, starting five.
My answer would be a little different. So I think when we talk about your definition of the leadership team again, which is you and your peers, you cannot choose your starting five because your boss chose them, right? So this is his immediate team that reports into him. But I think you can choose your own starting five or whatever, starting seven or starting four within your organization. And I would like to make the proposal for everyone who's listening that don't just go with the people who are reporting into you in your org chart. Take people from the organization who you believe could be personally beneficial to any discussion you're having. Obviously, don't make it a team of 20 people if you're having an organization of 50. But if you have, like, let's say 3, 4, 5, 600 people and you have 8 people reporting into you, it doesn't harm to have another 2, 3, 4 people from the organization, from different locations, maybe from different domains, from different expertises to be part of you. And I think it's up to you to understand and to determine if that person is going to be a troublemaker always, or if you want to keep someone you can trust, obviously, because that person will hear all kinds of things. Not everyone else is going to hear in the organization, but if someone can bring in impulses that are helpful for the discussion and that can prevent groupthink or some sort of disconnection of the leadership team from the rest of the organization, this is very, very helpful, because I think most of our listeners would probably agree that it is very common for top leadership teams to be in ivory towers, to be disconnected with the overall average employee from a company.
That's why you bring in a Dennis Rodman who knows what street life looks like, right?
And oh, man, totally, totally. I love that. You know, maybe one final statement from my side, which is maybe something that could help our listeners to basically execute that idea. It's a quote from Jeff Bezos. He says, "Everyone is right, everyone, even the most junior person is right when they have data." So it's not that you're inviting someone over to have a chit-chat. It is that you're inviting someone's perspective, and that person can speak up and can share their thoughts if they have some proof that the thoughts have some foundation. And I think that's fair enough.
That's a good ending, right? Who wouldn't disagree with Jeff Bezos in this case? Some of the most, one of the most successful leaders we have, or somebody build up a company from scratch, more or less. All right. Thanks for that exchange, for that conversation. And hopefully to all the listeners, you got something out of it. We sometimes have a little bit of a different opinion on things, but that's okay as well. And take what you like out of it. Hopefully you learned something or you had fun. Both of it would be okay. José, have a good night.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Together, let's make this world a little better.
With human-centric leadership.
With people, for people.